downward day, Anatevka, dear little village, little town of mine.
It's just a place.
Our forefathers have been forced out of many, many places at a moment's notice.
Maybe that's why we always wear our hats.
And there you have it, Fiddler on the Roof. Our time is just about up, so thanks for listening. Have a great week. God bless. And tune in again next week for Big Band Broadway and Beyond. And we're going to sign off here with a little more of the After Five Jazz Ensemble.
WHFR Dearborn. Listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and this is the new WHFR Journal, your great resource for local news and views here in the Dearborn area from WHFR.FM.
Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Dennis.
we're here. We are in Kristen Risbeck and Dennis Reimers are in for our fearless leader, Jay Cornick, today, who is out of town. He is in, told us last week, he is in Austin, Texas for it's kind of a movie festival down there. I know he goes down there and it's jam-packed, one thing after another, all movie-related, and he'll be down there for a week, something like that, but he will be back next week for the show. So please save all of your comments and concerns until he comes back. Kristen and I are, as she said, this is the new WHFR Journal, every Friday from 1 to 2 at Henry Ford Community College. We're live. And as Jay says, this is a show that covers local news with alternative views. So I'll state right off the top that the opinions expressed here by Kristen and me are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College or even of Jay, the normal host of the show. Kristen, I wanted to get right into something that is in the Dearborn Press and Guide. It was from last Sunday. Right on the cover, it's a study that the study states that 1 in 5 Dearborn students not on track to graduate on time. And it goes back to, and it gives percentage breakdown, starting with their freshman year of high school all the way up through their senior year of high school. And I know that we talked a little bit off air about this, and I think that, did that surprise you?
Yes, it really did.
Okay. Now, I'll go into, I'll take a little bit out of the article. I'll read right from it. This was written by Katie Hattrick. Again, it was in last Sunday's edition of the Press and Guide. She said, about 1 in 5 Dearborn Public High School students is not on track to graduate with his or her class. A new report shows that 12% of freshmen, 20% of sophomores, 22% of juniors, and 19% of seniors are short on the credits they should have had by the end of the first semester of this school year. So in other words, they're looking at freshmen, and that's probably why that number is a lot lower, because obviously when you're just starting out, it's pretty good odds that you're going to have all of your credits, right?
Yeah, it's hope so.
Well, let's hope so. By the end of your senior year, though, of course, if you miss some time, if you failed a class, you dropped, whatever, that's when it usually comes back and bites you. And I guess I wanted your feeling on it, because they broke this down by high school, and I think you actually did get a chance to see that.
Yeah. Not on track to graduate. Yeah, it is kind of surprising. I do question, though, did they take into consideration when, you know, they're looking at the current juniors and seniors, correct, in this?
Right. Well, current freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors.
Well, right, but definitely the current juniors and seniors. Because I do know for a fact that in the last 2 years, certain credits have actually been added, required.
So additional credits.
Additional credits than from when these kids started as freshmen.
Right.
So, yeah, if they are already on track in a certain program, in a certain way they're going through, and then they become a junior or a senior,
right.
Juniors have at least that last year chance to maybe try to get into the class.
Mm-hmm.
But the seniors are, well, out of luck.
Right.
You know, what are they supposed to do? Go to summer school all of a sudden,
yeah,
that you've added, you know, an extra requirement?
If it is in fact due to that, in other words, a student is behind because more classes are required and they therefore are short because they had a different plan going in,
mm-hmm,
it would seem that the school would take that into consideration. I mean, you know, you're right. Well, we both kind of rolled our eyes because, I mean, there's so many students that are in different situations. There's many situations as there are students. For example, I know somebody very, very close to my family who had an ongoing illness, something that it was never quite figured out what the problem was. And the student was, I don't know, are you familiar, Kristen, with the homebound program?
No, I'm not.
What happens is a student can't go to regular classes with their classmates. So they're at home dealing with whatever affliction, doctor's appointments and such. And a liaison from the school comes to the house 2 days a week, usually on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and just coordinates the efforts of what the teachers are trying to accomplish with the student's curriculum. You know, I know for a fact that the student's curriculum was a little bit less rigorous than maybe a normal student, but again, we're talking about homebound. Well, even though the student followed this program, they got way behind in overall studies. So they were looking at an additional 2 to 3 semesters longer at the high school level. The student decided that they didn't want to do this and did the equivalent of dropping out. Didn't want to do it because they were lazy. No, more likely because they had been with their class and there was a situation where you're already possibly a year and a half behind and you're already looking forward. The person ended up coming here early and is already enrolled in Henry Ford Community College. So, I mean, that particular number would be in these statistics. But then I wonder about, and that's at Edsel Ford High School, which, as you and I saw, really,
yeah,
took
the lowest. Yeah, it took a hit. I was surprised, actually, that Edsel was the lowest one.
And you look at Ford,
or the highest one. I'm sorry,
the highest percentage.
Right, the highest percentage
of students not on track. And then
I meant the lowest rated.
Right.
Yeah.
Lowest rated.
Yeah.
And you look at Fordson, and in my mind, and that's nothing more than I do know a lot of people in the Fordson school district that English is their second language, so they're dealing with challenges right out of the gate. You
right.
know. So in my mind, I extrapolate that to the end and say, well, more likely they will have problems, you know, in the future, especially as they move forward in school. So that's why I looked at it and I was like, I wonder what the criteria was.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious as to what.
Well, I mean, they tell with the criteria. They said it's students that after the first semester of this year, how close to the amount of credits that they need, let's call that par.
Okay.
How close to par that they are, and those percentages that we saw are based on actually being behind by one or more credits. I don't know. I guess that's a little misleading because with the homebound, the student that I know that was in the homebound class received no credits at all for the year that she was at home.
Okay, so there could be a lot of other factors that
so many circumstances
that aren't being considered when something like this is report. You know,
right.
The data thrown out there.
It just bothers me because I do know, I don't know, I just, I know the people at Etzel Ford may be better than most because my kids went there. And I know them. And you know, you and I talked about other, you know, there's advanced placement things. I know for a fact that some students that weren't considerably challenged at Etzel Ford, but they weren't quite ready for the advanced placement, which, as you know, is a lot more challenging.
Right, right.
So if you're in that between spot. I don't know how you were in high school, but it took a lot to challenge me. And I wasn't like smarter than everybody else. I just got bored easily, you know? So anyway, there's a lot of factors affecting the students.
Well, I find it interesting though, because I'm looking here at this article. And once again, we're talking about an article that was in the Press and Guide with the topic study, 1 in 5 Dearborn students not on track to graduate on time. They're talking about how they have an ASAP program to allow students at all grades to immediately try to make up a failed course. But it's $150
okay.
for these students to get into the course. I kind of sit there and go, well, now, wait a minute. If they're behind in credits or they don't have the credits, isn't there any kind of responsibility there as far as the school counseling program that should have been counseling them and coming to them prior to this stage and saying, hey, no, you need to take this because you need this credit and you need this credit? I mean, wouldn't a counselor be responsible for that?
For the student that was working, that was homebound, and again, this is a very good friend of our family, so
right.
I'm comfortable talking about this. Her counselor did give her a heads up. So I mean, the counselor, and maybe that was an anomaly. Maybe this is a great counselor, but counselor was involved in this entire process along with the liaison from the school. In that particular situation, there's not a lot anybody could do. You're sick, you're home, there's nothing we can
right.
do. Let's try to keep up. I'm looking at all these other people, and this is where your question is extremely valid. What about the kids that are just not doing it? They're lazy. I mean, and again, I was a high school student. I know that I wasn't always 100% motivated. You know, and I didn't put the onus on my teachers or whatever. I know that it was up to me to get the work done. Anyway, there should be an early warning sign. And I think I go back even further than that, or even closer to home than that. And as a parent, I think that I would want to be clued in on this. Counselor dealing with the student, that's fine, but I should be taking care of business at home too.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I actually have two high schoolers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always amazed as to how much responsibility that the school puts on the student. Now, I understand they're going to be off in the real world and going to college, and they need to learn how to, you know, do things. But one of my children was put into a very, very interesting situation with a scheduling conflict, and they were told that they would no longer accept this class that they previously, at the end of the year when they scheduled her for it.
Mm-hmm.
They said that it would count towards, you know, this certain program that she's in. And then they decided, oh, well, no, we're not doing that now. It's in the fall. And they were trying to expect her to handle it. And it was only until I got involved, because she finally was like, I have to take this other class. And I go, what does that have to do with anything? I thought you were taking this class. We had it all situated at the end of the year.
And if I can interject, based on, and I know that if you're talking about your daughter, I mean, she's on the fast track. I mean, she's doing more than school. I guess my point is that you're budgeting your time very carefully with her because there's so much going on.
Right.
Right.
And then I finally was, whoa, why are you handling this?
Right.
I said, cause this isn't right. And we had this all, I mean, cause we had a meeting with the counselor at the end of the school year and got this whole thing worked out for the fall. And then fall came, and there was a new head of this other department, and they decided, no, we don't want to take that credit. We don't want to take that class as credit for this program.
It sounds and almost arbitrary.
And it was like, whoa, wait a minute.
Right.
I said yes at the end, and because of that, it was too late. And they waited until like 3 weeks into the semester to inform her of this and told her she was going to have to switch classes in order to maintain her credits in the program. And it was, wait a minute, that you can't just up and change kids. So my whole point, I guess.
No, I see where you're headed with this.
Is this whole lack of credits and not on track to graduate? Well, if you're constantly changing things and you're deciding this and that and you're, you know, kind of messing kids up as they're going through school with their schedules, what do you expect?
And, you know, and to be fair, I guess, let's throw this out there, that it's possible because of the budget cuts, which it's been no secret on this show
right.
or to anyone,
yeah.
that a lot of things are in flux. So many things are in flux. But the one thing you cannot do, above all, and it's already, because the kids are already being penalized enough, let's face it.
Right.
So you can't do that. You can't pull the carpet out of, for lack
right.
of a better
it's
term.
It's like, let's be a little, you want to say that for next year, great.
Right.
But right now, you have to grandfather those kids that you already said yes to.
Okay.
You know, that you can't just.
Ultimately, what happened? I mean, was it in fact you had to find something to replace that credit?
Actually, believe it or not, it's still in debate.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
But yeah. Will that put your daughter even more behind, or have you figured out a?
Hopefully, we have figured out a solution.
Okay.
But it's not one that, you know, that I want to go over the air. But
sure.
But yeah, I was just kind of surprised as to how difficult it was to take this student. And we're talking, okay, we're talking about something that can make a huge difference for somebody, you know, that's going to college, that's, you know, she's got a 3.8. She's in the AP classes. She's doing all this. And you want to mess that up.
Right.
It was like, aren't you an educator?
Yeah.
You know?
No.
Do you not see, you know, what's happening here?
So, and I guess it's what interesting is, and your daughter is locked into these programs. Again, this isn't something that, unlike the inbounds, the homebound student who said, no, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to just go to college early.
Right. I have to mention, this wasn't like a national or a state change. This was just an own individual headmaster kind of change.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there was room to be a little flexible.
Right.
You know, and chose not to be.
I mean, you know, and again, I'd love to hear how that ends because that's, no, I mean, my kids went to the same school. So I want to move along though. Staying with students anyway. There was a web exclusive on the PressandGuide.com. The web exclusive, the title is School Business Partnerships Touted to Fed Official. The Fed official being a Dr. Brenda Dan Messier, who visited our area yesterday. And she is the first assistant secretary for the Office of Vocational and Adult Education. Wow.
Say that 10 times
fast. How'd you have to write that out every time? Who are you? Here.
Is she an acronym?
No, not here. O-V-A-E? No.
O-V-A-E.
No,
O-V-A.
Yeah.
O-V-A.
No, that's... No. Poor Dr. Dan Messier. But the point is that she did come to the area for the reason, for the purpose of speaking with the school officials. Students went to the Michael Berry Center, which is in Dearborn Heights and right next to our satellite, Dearborn Heights campus, the satellite campus. And basically what came out of all this is businesses said, we would like to help and mentor more. We would like to, we know... First of all, the kids that are coming out of school, we've determined they're not qualified right away for what we need them for. And this is different businesses.
Out of college or out of high school?
Both.
Both. Okay.
Exactly. They're not prepared. Again, you and I had an interesting conversation on the respective merits of vocational schools versus traditional college or university. And can I state what your opinion?
Yeah, sure.
You felt that in many cases, if not most, the vocational schools better prepare the student for the real world, for the job.
Well, for the specific job.
For specific
for the
job. Specific,
yes, for the specific area that the student is looking into.
Well, I think that this particular, these meetings that went on yesterday at the Michael Berry Center, and they had lunch there too, and it's a student run lunchroom, I guess. So this was like the whole student experience, you know. But the mentors, or let's call them the business people, the business leaders are saying the kids aren't quite ready, or in a lot of ways they could be better prepared. They're not saying they're not ready, but in a lot of ways they could be better prepared. And one of the actual people, and I'm not going to quote names or whatever, but to paraphrase him, he says one of my mentees came to me and said, why do I need algebra? I don't like it. Why do I need it? And this mentor, this business leader, was able to show in very real, you know, graphic demonstration how that algebra would in turn help the student, not only in this job but in life, but specifically in this job. And so that's what they're doing. So here's the school saying, we want to know ways to better prepare the students. And the business leaders are saying, okay, here they are. And I just think that that's a magical combination. I do. I think that that's really important because if the right person is teaching it, and it is very specific to a job, I agree with you 100% that you can learn. You can get into that job a lot more quickly than you can with an overall general education.
Right. Well, but I think also part of the problem right now is that, not to date myself, but when I graduated from high school, and yourself too, you could still get jobs with just a high school diploma.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I mean, college was like for the people who wanted to go above and beyond, and they want. I'm finding now that even the most jobs, I don't mean to demean the jobs, everyone's, you know, important in the workforce, but I'm just saying jobs that don't, in my opinion, require a 4-year college degree are requiring some sort of college education or degree.
Yeah.
To get, I mean, even the restaurant industry.
Huh. Good point.
You know,
the best point, actually. Yeah.
The restaurant industry, you used to be able to start in the restaurant industry and, you know, work your way through whether it was dishwashing, you know, and then server and all that. And then you could go into the management program. Now, there are still some companies that do that. But these days, they're like culinary arts degree necessary, or must have culinary arts degree, must have this, must have that, just to start to get into it. And it's like, well. So a college degree to me is becoming more like what the high school diploma used to be.
Exactly. Gosh, that's really well said.
It's just paralleling.
And the fact is, even the to use your example, the restaurants, even though you can still work your way up, they still at a certain point, especially like assistant management, you know, management trainee or whatever, still require at least some college. Some college in our world equates to a 2-year degree.
Right.
So it's not, some college doesn't mean, well, I went for a semester and then it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
Right? So then I've been here since, you know, 2005 as a waiter and bartender, so I want to be a man. I mean, that worked in our old model, you know, and see, where I grew up, it was kind of like the area that I was in, our school was considered college prep. Most of the students went to at least community college from there. If not, and this is an interesting contrast, but if not, they went into the military.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, those were the options there. If you went directly from high school into the workforce, you had a pretty good job, or you were starting your own landscaping business. You know, I mean, no, and many of my friends did that. Two of my friends started a vending company.
Hey, there could be a lot of money in there.
No, heck yeah. It's been a long time since you got $10 for cutting a whole lawn. And I grew up in Livonia where grass was aplenty, you know, so whatever. Back to this study, though, the interesting quote that I wanted to read, they talked about the programs that are in place, the programs either currently in place or they're initiating, and they are more or less a business kind of mentoring program to give students a better idea. It said these programs help the schools, but in the long term also help the businesses. And listen to this quote. This is from Shannon Dunavent. She's with DoubleTree, which is
a hotel right over here in Dearborn.
And she said, I interview 30 people out of college, and I'm lucky if I get one that is capable of the job.
Wow.
Okay. The job is service industry. So you're exactly, it's hotel service industry. And she does, the employees mentor the children, and they actually have classes that are allowed to visit the facility. If I'm looking at 30 applicants, and maybe one is qualified, I'm saying, yeah, bring your classrooms in here by the bus load, because I want people to be exposed to what I'm doing. I'm going to put a fresh face on it too, and I'm going to sell you on it, because I think that's what's happening now. You have to motivate. You really want to do this? Do you want to work in this job? This is what you need to do.
Right.
Boom, boom, boom.
Right.
You know? And are we getting that specific? I think we are. I think
we are too.
Our first time around in college back 100 years ago. no, seriously, it was. It was. We didn't know what we wanted to do. How many times did you change your major?
Yeah, well, I still don't know what I want to do. Yeah.
When I grow up, I thought you were going to be a shepherd. You were so sure of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was, you know.
Frolicking in a meadow somewhere.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, back then being...
Not too long ago.
Thank you. You didn't necessarily know what you wanted to do, but still a well-rounded, fundamental, basic education was what you built upon. Now it seems like you're in school, you're not even in college for a semester, and they're going, what do you want to do? Okay, you have to, you know, if you want to get into one of these technology jobs, they can't get you into the energy that the tech building fast enough. Right, there's a lot to know, but I think that we're specialized so much now compared to how it used to be.
Yeah. Well, definitely. Well, before, you used to be able to graduate with a degree in business, a business degree, you know, bachelor's.
Right.
And you had a lot of job openings available to you. But now, everybody has, not everybody, but the way that, because so many people have been going to college now instead of just getting jobs right out of high school, you know, it's becoming like the high school diploma, you're graduating, and they're saying, yes, but what specific area of business did you get your degree in? I just got the general business
studies,
degree.
Sure.
Yeah, or whatever. And it's, oh, well, we deal with international business, or we deal with healthcare, or we deal with that. You know, it seems like the degrees, well, vocational is great too, but degrees are having to become so much more specific to an industry now.
And some might argue that the colleges are behind this because it is more money for them. Let's face it. The more specific a program gets and the more classes that are required, the more class you have to take and there's more tuition of social blah, blah, blah. But I think that this is ultimately dictated by the marketplace, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And I went to the Michigan Association of Broadcasters, the Great Lakes Conference on Wednesday. Great turnout. 33 vendors there. I call them vendors. They're representatives from different radio stations, companies that own multiple radio stations. Citadel owns 16 within our state. So those 33 vendors represented 108 different stations, including some colleges. Northern was there. And boy, were they specific. It was exactly like you said. You went in there and you said, you know, I have some training. I was on WHFR. You know, you have a chance. It's a career fair. You've been to it. You know, you can go right up and talk to people. And, okay, well, you've done talk shows. I said, well, yeah, actually, I've done this. Well, what did you talk about? Well, it's a public affairs. Specifically what? I'm looking at it, I'm like, really? And it really was that specific. Yeah. Did you talk about politics? Well, some. Okay, because we have a show just about politics. And we have a show just about sports. And we, you know, and it's like that. And so they want that even in our industry. Being well-rounded only gets you so far. And maybe that's not even good enough if you just play music.
Right.
You know?
Right. So well, and that goes back, though, to this whole article about the vocational education. Is that I just, you know, she has 30 applicants and she can't get one that can actually, that seems to be competent enough to do the job.
So she's lucky if she gets one that is capable of the job. Wow.
Right. Well, it's because the college degree, a general college degree, has now become like a high school diploma.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have to take somebody who just took another 4 years to get a generalization and train them. It used to be you came out of college and you knew what to do.
Yeah.
You know, yes, there was always some on the job training
specific to a different company. Sure,
right. But now it seems like they want even more specific now coming out with college degrees. I think it's more dictated by marketplace than by the colleges.
Well, and then in turn, the marketplace could be and heavily influenced by the economy. We just don't have the time, money, or resources to train people like we used to. So we need them to know more when they get out of school. That's what school is for. You know, and you and I are arguing against that. We're saying, no, it's not. Not necessarily. But restaurant job, we'll use your example. I went to one, a relatively upscale, a casual fine dining restaurant right here in Dearborn. One solid week of training. One solid week. And I already had experience at another restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So to go in there, I needed 1 week of training and it included everything. Oh, boy. It was pretty intense, too. We had alcohol awareness. We even tried the wines. We tried the menu. We knew what was in the food. And then you followed. After this week of training, you followed for 2 to 3 days, meaning you shadowed somebody else and you learned how they, you know, because there's so many different parts. Waiting tables, it's not rocket science, but some companies want things done a specific way.
Right.
You know?
Well, that, believe me, there's a lot of bad servers out there.
Yeah, I know that. I'm no longer doing it though. Okay, so you're safe.
Yeah, we're safe from Dennis.
We're safe from me.
No, but I'm just saying it. There's. I think that their a business would benefit greatly if they would just start investing in their own type of vocational training, no matter what kind of business it is. Mm-hmm. Be like, actually, don't know. I hate to throw companies out there, but Disney actually has something called the Disney College.
They do. Yep.
You know, and it's because they're like, all right, we're not getting the people coming out of the colleges with the correct, you know, credentials or what they can do.
It's so not even qualified. Decided, it's their potential. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. They've decided we're going to train our next employees. And I think that's fantastic, actually.
It is.
I'm not against college. Don't get me wrong.
No, no.
I'm not against college at all. I mean, you know.
Some of my best friends go to college.
Yeah, I think it's an individual
situation.
But I think something like that is fantastic, especially if you are one of those people that know exactly what you want to go into. I have two, like I mentioned, I have two in high school.
Yeah.
One knows exactly what field she wants to go into. She wants to be an accountant. She wants to be CPA. She's taken all the courses at the college. She's ready to go. My other one has no clue.
Right, which is very common. Right,
which is very common. You know, so if you know what direction you want to go into, you know, something like that could be greatly beneficial for you, especially time-wise.
You know, but and Disney's another great example, but they have a history of excellence. They have... You know all
very
the stories.
High standards,
you cannot
very high,
you cannot
yeah.
be in that park without if you start at the bottom rung and you're goofy or whatever,
yeah, yeah.
and you're a performer, you are wearing that costume. You are not. They have specific areas outside of view of the people in the park where you can go down below. And there is, in fact, Mitch Albom wrote a great article about this years ago, where he saw Mickey without his hat on.
Yeah.
And it kind of, even though Mitch Albom was obviously a grown man, it bothered him because you think of me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It kind of killed the illusion.
Yeah, it totally kills the illusion.
But he was down below in the under tunnels or whatever they do down there. And then you spring up somewhere in the park where there's nobody and you kind of meld right in.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of secret things that are going on there that you need that training. Last thing on this, you brought up something and I wanted to bring this quote in. John Masick, vice president of Bering Service, agreed with the other speakers that helping students narrow down what they want to do would help them succeed. Obviously. He received 1,900 resumes for 3 job openings in accounting and sales management.
Wow.
Yeah. Those applying cover the spectrum of job hopes from engineering to busboy, he said. And his quote, "It's very clear that students coming out of high school don't have a clue what they want to do," end quote. And I think your daughter who knows, is it your daughter that wants to, or your child that wants to be the accountant, the CPA, is way ahead of most people.
Now. Yeah, yeah. And she is so excited about it. Now, do I think she completely understands the position? No. Because she hasn't been out there. Like, I think kids like that, I think they should have, back to this article, they should have that business connection that says, great, you're that interested in accounting. Come on. Let us show you how it's all done.
And don't you think that the business owners would be open to that?
I think they should be. First of all, I think it's great PR.
Yeah.
You know, if you're an upstanding company.
Well, your name's in this article. First of all, I mean, there's your PR.
You know, and then you have somebody who, you know, is either ready to just go ahead and join you when they, you know, get out of college, or, you know, they may recommend you to somebody else. Who knows?
I was going
to
deviate, but again, back to this article.
Well, let me deviate just for one second. Sure. You're listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is the new WHFR Journal. And I'm Kristen Risbeck and Dennis Reimars. We're here sitting in for Jay Kornick, who is your usual host.
Yeah, he's on the beach somewhere.
Yeah, he's out having a grand old time watching a bunch of movies.
He's probably watching a movie right now. Enjoy it, Jay. You deserve it. Businesses want, this is again from the article, and I'll finish up here, I'm sorry, but businesses want employees who know how to compete, and they need workers with soft skills, such as ability to work on a team and communicate effectively. okay, duh, right?
Yeah, but that's hard.
Exactly. I mean, I go, yeah, whatever.
That's even hard for me, I'll admit.
Yeah, well, and I can definitely confirm that. Here's a quote again from John Masick. Most of the students who come out with a four-year degree don't have the skills they need to be successful. He says it's really about the skills, not that they've successfully completed 16 years of school. That's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's a good example for you, okay? I actually, when I used to be a ballroom dance instructor.
Did you really?
I'm putting that out there. Nobody knew that, but I'm putting that out there.
I think we got a new show on WHFR now,
I used to be
folks.
A ballroom dance instructor. Well, it was when I was fairly young, and I had no experience. I loved to dance. That was the only experience, you know, that I had was I loved to dance. And I answered an ad, and I decided to go and apply for it, even though I didn't have ballroom dance experience.
Right.
So I was one of quite a few interviewees that were, you know, there for this position.
What's quite a few? Four?
20.
Oh.
Yeah, I'd say almost about 20. I'd say about 20.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
And I got hired. Out of these 20 people, I ended up getting hired. And it took about 3-4 weeks before I, you know, finally got up the nerve to ask, you know, out of all those people, you know, that were here, I was like, why did you choose me? And the woman said, oh, I don't care about experience. She's like, I need somebody with a great attitude, a positive personality. She's like, I can teach anyone how to dance.
Right.
She's like, what I can't teach you is how to be polite and how to have a great personality and deal with people and know how to talk with people.
Right.
And I just went, wow. Yeah, I mean, it was a real eye-opener
right.
for me.
And they don't teach that in school.
No,
do they
don't.
No, we do here.
Thank you. That was my whole point.
Right.
Is that they don't teach that in school.
Right.
They just teach you the class.
And your employer at that time might argue, well, that's not something I can teach you, but it is. It really is. It can become a habit. It can be, look, if you act this way, these are the consequences. If you act this way, it's much better. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that goes back to real world experience. If you have a mentor, if you're interested in a certain field, mine was always writing. Not necessarily even journalism, just writing in general. And I had mentors over the years, people that encouraged me, usually in their particular, you know, their favorite line or whatever. Oh, no, I write fiction, so I'm going to, you know, and I had my own thing that I wanted to do. So, it, you know, maybe I should pick my mentors better, right? but the point is that attitude part of it.
You bad mentor picker, you.
Yeah, you bad mentee. Those things that you're talking about, they do try to if not teach them, then at least reinforce them here. Chad Austin, the job placement officer here, mm-hmm. he gives these seminars. We have another one coming up in April, Dress for Success. And he continually hammers home the fact that you have to look the part, you have to play the part, you have to expect it. You go in there with the right mindset. And it sounds like you did all those things inherently. 19 other people didn't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I think her point, though, was that she doesn't, she's trying to run a business.
Right.
She doesn't have the time to
teach you to
teach
be nice.
Me, you know, what is appropriate apparel, what is appropriate language, what is, you know,
right.
She wants somebody that she can just start teaching the dance steps to and moving right along.
Right.
How
long did it take before you felt really comfortable? Like that where you were out there?
Like a month.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But I worked my butt off too.
Yeah.
Like I was constantly learning those steps. I mean, I was drilling myself all the time.
So you're
I have a really, you know, strong work ethic. I have a
right.
real, you know.
And so your employer was rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's
right.
It's amazing. She knew what to look for. I wanted to move on to something else that we had talked about that goes to it affects the schools for sure, but other things on a bigger scale, and that was the budget proposals raise more than eyebrows. You know what I'm talking
yes.
about here?
Yeah.
This goes back. There was, I'll read it from here.
Yeah, go for it.
Bold budget proposals here are raising eyebrows and ire. In recent memos, here being Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, city officials have brought up the possibility of Dearborn assuming clerk's office duties in Dearborn Heights, as well as laid out significant proposals to change police lieutenants and sergeants contracts in Dearborn. But back to the first thing. This is from Tuesday's edition of the Dearborn Press and Guide. This particular article was by J. Patrick Pepper. J. Patrick Pepper talks about the city officials from Dearborn would assume the clerk's duties in Dearborn Heights. And the reason why is because it was prompted by the announcement last month that Dearborn Heights clerk Judy Dudzinski And most of her staff would resign at the end of March. Well, that means there's this huge, like, gaping hole where her and her staff were. And not only do we have a lot of people leaving, but all that knowledge, too, you know, as they put it here. I think they even use a particular term for her. It's in here somewhere. Anyway, she has all this knowledge. So you have to train somebody, but not somebody, somebody's. So that created this huge hole. At the same time, the article spends a great deal of time talking about how the Dearborn clerk, Kathy Buda, was blindsided by the proposed merger, and she was upset that she'd not been informed earlier. I thought that was interesting from a couple aspects. One, I mean, let's get on with the job, really.
Right.
I mean, you know, I mean, right. I appreciate that you're upset and people should have told you or whatever, but you even admitted that you didn't know that these other things were going on. I think that the whole subject of consolidating within, you know, individual communities as well as within other communities is really getting a lot of people upset. I mean, all over the country, we're talking about it. This doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal, though.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. I think that a lot of people right now, there's budget crisis everywhere, no matter what situation you're in, and you can't take it personally, you know, like oh, my feelings are hurt,
right?
Well, okay, can we just get past that?
Right, we appreciate it. At the same time, there's bigger things at stake here. You still have a job.
Right, you still have a job. Okay, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings, but see, I'm also not the most sensitive person in the world, so.
Yeah, that was also discussed with the ballroom dance. No. What Ms. Buda said was, if me or my deputy is in Dearborn Heights, are the citizens getting the service they should? Basically, she felt that she should have been told first. Now, after having some time to mull the idea, the consolidation idea, and receiving a written apology for not being consulted, I think that's important, Ms. Buda acknowledged some of the potential pluses. So after having time to think about it,
right,
and, you know, the soreness going away from the wounds, revenue for Dearborn, providing a service for a neighboring community that needs it, that's huge, and achieving greater economies of scale because we're consolidating.
Right, so she came around. You know, she's kind of come around. But I also think that in this article, I do believe that later on, they were just inquiries. There was no official proposal thrown out there that the Dearborn Heights and City of Dearborn were going to merge together and do this. This was just a finance guy who was putting it out there to see if they would even be interested.
That's exactly right.
So there really was no reason, in my opinion, to alert the entire City of Dearborn staff that, hey, we might be doing this. What do you think?
This was,
it was just an inquiry.
City Finance Director Jim O'Connor, he's the one who put these memos together. He penned the memos. He said, O'Connor said his suggestion was really more to gauge interest rather than lay the groundwork for a merger.
Right.
So in other words, do you think this will work?
Yeah, like they went and played, you know, they didn't play golf because, you know, now we live in a world of technology where we just email each other.
Right, plus
but,
it's cold.
But think of it as just like a on-the-golf-course conversation. Everybody has those. Like, hey, you know what? This idea, I thought about this idea. What do you think? You know?
Yeah.
It's not like, okay, I'm going to draft all this formal inquiry letter.
He's O'Connor.
And send it to everybody else. And I don't know. I just think people are getting a little too sensitive about
O'Connor said the sensitivity to the clerk and the police, because they talked about a police idea also.
Whose feelings were hurt, right?
Very much so. But this was a little different. They're considering cutting the mandatory minimum staffing from 205 sworn officers to 150. So that's 55 officers less as a minimum. So they're talking about it. But again, O'Connor said that the sensitivity to the clerk and police ideas are premature. Quote, the mayor has said repeatedly that everything is on the table, O'Connor said. I am taking the steps to look at the feasibility of these things, but they are entirely premature. Or preliminary, I'm sorry. So the sensitivity is premature, but the ideas are preliminary. So thank you for putting that out there. I have a feeling next time around, Mr. O'Connor might probably look.
I'm gonna go to the golf course.
Yeah. They're not playing golf. Perfect. Nobody's there. Yeah. So no, I do. I mean, I'm looking at, in this budget cuts. We, you know, if you listen to the journal, this is the new WHFR journal. Kristen Risbeck, Dennis Reimer sitting in for Jay Kornick. The budget cuts are obviously something that's been going on I mean, the conversation's been going on for a long time. I think as long as I've been with the station.
Yeah.
You know? And then one of the things that I was looking at in my paper, here it is. All of the things that they're putting on the on the table. The mayor did say that at the State of the City address. He said anything. Everything has to be considered. We had Mr. Schoolmaster on right after that. And he was sitting where I'm sitting. I was across from him, and I looked him in the eye, and I said, we're talking about all these budget cuts. I understand we have to, because that's the easiest thing to do, is look at what we're spending and look where we can spend less. It's so much money now. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's not, I mean, it's not a couple dollars anymore. It's lot of money.
Yeah, it's millions upon millions of dollars that we're talking.
And on the state level, billions. And I asked him, and I said, Mr. Schoolmaster, I said, and I understand we're making these cuts where necessary to the point where it hurts. Everybody agrees. Can we start increasing revenue? I said, can we start looking at some of these ideas? Dearborn Heights had it. I think it was in the Annapolis School District, where they were looking at different ways to raise money by offering advertising on the school buses and around the school. Relevant, appropriate advertising. Right. And I specifically, and that was, Jay and I had this conversation because, of course, your background too, we're in print. We know about advertising. Right. We know that a lot of it can be, it's like printing money in some cases if you do it right. So I asked him, and he kind of just looked in his eye, and he said, absolutely. We are looking at that. When the mayor said everything's considered, the only thing that the focus is always on the budget cuts, but the reality is increasing revenue is right up there just as important. I wanted to get your feeling on that as a parent with kids in the school, and your kids are different, various ages. So how do you feel about advertising at the high school level?
Well, once again, it would have, like you said, it would have to be appropriate advertising. You know, I mean, you obviously, you know, I can see where there would be a sticky situation.
Right.
There.
You mean a borderline business?
What I deem appropriate and what you deem appropriate.
Right.
And what so-and-so deems appropriate. And then some business saying, well, I'm appropriate. Why won't you let me advertise? That's discriminating.
I'm not on your list or whatever.
Right.
Sure.
You know, so I can see where there might be some headaches involved with that. However, the alternative of not allowing, you know, the outside forces to come in, you know, so to speak.
No, I think it's a great way to put it.
Is generally the person who ends up paying more are the taxpayers.
Yeah.
It's like, sure, increased revenue. We want to have increased revenue, absolutely.
Yeah.
But who's the one who ultimately has to pay the increased revenue? It's the taxpayers who are already on unemployment, losing their job, or they had to take a lesser job, so they're not making as much anymore, or they just lost their house.
Right.
So, hey, here's an idea. Let's tax them. How does that?
Right.
How does
and
that
you're
going to
take away my pool? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but yeah.
I had to throw that in there. Sorry. No, and I'm looking at a headline from the Press and Guide from last Sunday. Temporary tax rate hike could be on ballot. Exactly what you're talking about. The city, without coming to us, can automatically go up to a certain point, which they will, I promise. And there's an increase of an additional from 13.62 to 18.5 mils. They probably won't get it on the ballot in May, most likely in November.
In November.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know about this. So these are the same things you're talking about. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could find appropriate advertising? I work with the Mirror News. I work with appropriate advertising every day. All of the Western, Wayne State, all these colleges in the area and institutions of higher learning. They don't even have to be colleges. They advertise in the paper, and I think that's very appropriate for the high school level, on the buses and in the schools. Appropriate higher learning advertising.
Oh, here's a really good example, actually, of what you're just talking about.
Okay.
That the school has implemented, and I think it's highly, highly successful, and I wish I had one here with me, but the school used to create a newsletter called School Matters.
Okay.
And it was sent out to everyone in the city of Dearborn. It was mailed to everyone in the city of Dearborn, and kids could bring them home and all that. What they did in place of that is they actually created a newspaper called Dearborn Public School Matters.
Right.
But it's totally self-sufficient. There are advertisers that are put into this now. And it's a tabloid publication.
I've seen it. Do I get it at my house?
Well, no, because they send it home with the kids. So they cut out postage.
Right.
They cut out using the school's funds for printing and everything for that because now the advertisers are paying for it.
Right.
And students can submit things. It's about students. People want the paper now. It's not just these little quips, you know, were generally fairly uninteresting. It's almost become like a second local paper, but it's just school-related items.
How often does that come out?
I think it's monthly.
Is it monthly?
Yeah, I think it's monthly.
No, it's self-sufficient. There could be a way to actually, I mean, if it's going out to everybody, I mean, that makes it relevant right there because you're a parent. Right. You won't get it unless you're a parent is what you're saying.
Pretty much.
So you can really target that. That's mm-hmm. very specific.
Mm-hmm. And it is. If you look at some of the advertising that's in there,
yeah,
it is very family or school child
clothes,
or, yeah, oriented.
Whatever. But see, and again, I mean, that's where my mind automatically goes is mm-hmm. sell ad space. Let's let the businesses offset the cost.
But that's harder.
Is it?
See, it's easy to go, okay, we're just going to compile this piece of paper and put it on the ballot and say we're going to start charging a local tax.
Right.
That's easy. Trying to think outside of the box and come up with creative solutions is not easy. And it's not as easy to get everyone on board.
Well, you know, you hit on something really interesting. When, you know, Ford Motor Company, when they had all those dollars, and again, I mean, they've been hit by the economic crunch just like everybody else, and somehow they've actually come out better than they were. I mean, this is kudos to Ford, but they used to invest a lot of money in things when they could, when they had the money. And I'm looking at it, and they did that with a lot of times people didn't know where the money came from. Mm-hmm. When you have an ad, why not put a newspaper together like this? And you have an ad on the Ford Motor Company for X amount of dollars has that back page. At that point in time, they could talk about every program that they have that affects the children. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do it. I didn't even go for the path of least resistance when I was thinking about why it isn't being done on a bigger scale. But you might be right.
Because it's change is hard, first of all, for a lot of people. Yeah. But making change in traditional ways is easier than trying to make change in untraditional ways.
Right. Because there's a model, an existing model.
Right.
I mean, maybe that's why I was really excited about coming back to school at a later age, because I felt like, you know, we all get into ruts. And 20 years ago, things were a little different than they are now. You know, for me, hugely different. I didn't have a family 20 years ago. I do now, you know. But I think I expected more of that fresh creativity from the people around me. But I do know people that are like, you know, let's face it, there's a lot of non-traditional students like me. And they're like, no, I'm in school. I have this much time to be in school because I have another job and I have a family. And it's like we go from one thing to the other. So I can't completely blame people.
Well, jumping back to the whole thing of being creative in ways to cut costs, just real quick here is I can think of one immediately, and that is the food, the lunchroom situation. There would be food companies lining up out the door to, you know, be like, no, you carry our cheese sticks.
Right.
Or whatever, and the trays say, you know, like have their thing
kidding?
On them or
yes,
something
absolutely.
Like that.
There's a lot of ways.
Name brand recognition right there is building. You know, that's what McDonald's was built on.
Yeah.
Was name brand recognition. Get those kids while they're young, and when they're older, all we'll think of is McDonald's.
Oh, tell me about it. We would go on
around
the country, we would travel and I would see them and my eyes would light up. Because you knew the Golden Arches.
Yeah.
It was that name brand. Totally
right. So if we did allow that into the school, then you know, I could see a lot of costs getting cut just on that kind of stuff alone. Absolutely.
Are you saying adding marketing or with the food?
Adding marketing, just in general.
Yeah, because that does affect so many different things.
Yeah.
I mean, it does. I mean, believe me, I kept thinking product placement in my mind. There's so many ways to do this, but you have to be careful. It has to be very limited.
And that takes time.
It takes time.
And energy and...
Well, because, you know, the person who would the person who would really head this up and really control this, by the way, she just lost her job. I'm being sort of funny, but the reality is that there really room in the budget for somebody to, I think there should be if they're creating revenue.
Right.
We don't have much. This is Kristen Risbeck, Dennis Reimers. We're filling in for Jay Cornick for the new WHFR Journal. Have a couple minutes left. There was one other thing relating to school, and folks, I didn't pick this out. The Press and Guide and the Times Herald are just full of stuff regarding the schools. Tell me this later start time. Mm-hmm. For the Dearborn Public Schools. Did you hear about this?
Oh, yeah.
And they wanted to flip-flop the middle school with the high school, let the older kids have more time.
Yeah.
But then they said, well, there's really no concrete proof that that extra time helps the kids learn better. So why even go through the trouble of flipping?
Right.
What's your opinion on that?
My opinion.
Well, and again, you are very qualified to talk about this.
I have kids at all levels, high school, middle school, and elementary school.
Right.
I find that elementary school kids do way better at getting up earlier than high school kids.
Okay.
And middle school kids is kind of a middle ground, you know, as far as that goes. I have a problem just period with how early schools start. Like, in the normal work world, start work until 9 most of the time. But we expect kids, teenagers, to be at school by 7:20 a.m.
Am I wrong to think that there's a correlation there? I think that because the parents have to be at school at a pretty, let's face it, there's all different times, but the general is 9 to 5. They made everything earlier to make it easier to take the kids to school, or is that being naive?
Possibly. Possibly, but a lot of kids take the bus. A lot of kids take, I don't know.
Getting kids ready doesn't mean the same thing as it did. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Now. Yeah.
So I don't know. And I would have been actually kind of a proponent of the later time.
With that,
in the switching.
Interesting.
I do see, though, that there is a situation as far as sometimes the older kids, like the high school students, they do need to get out before elementary or middle school students because they have to watch them.
Right.
So they got to get home or get to the next school, whether they walk or, friend drives them or they drive, if they're over 16. And it's, so there's a ton of factors involved.
There really are a ton of factors involved. And I'm glad that they did this study. They came out with, there's really no huge difference. So ultimately, I don't think they're going to flip-flop. I don't think that they will.
No.
It's so different now because it used to be, okay, do you have your lunchbox? Do you have your permission slip? Right?
Yeah.
Now it's, do you have your iPod? Do you have your cell phone? You know what I mean? It is. It's so different now. We have about 6 minutes left. City being Dearborn, to regulate some medical marijuana users. And I just knew that this was going to happen. Not that I'm like, oh, this is great or this is bad. I'm sort of indifferent. But this never fails to just bring up controversy. There's so many people. Do you have an idea what I'm talking about here?
No, I mean, I have an idea of what you're talking about, but I have not read that article and I'm not that close to the topic.
Okay.
So I'm not really quite sure what.
I'll paraphrase. I mean, that certain individuals within the state can smoke marijuana legally, based on medical need. They have to go through a process, get a card. There's a process and it's monitored. But there are also caregivers who can grow. They won't necessarily use the marijuana for medical reasons, but they can grow. Okay. Well, they put some regulations in place, and they can do this. And what the city of Dearborn is trying to do is fill in the gaps where they feel that the state law is open to interpretation. Mm-hmm. Or there's an opening there for them to be able to do something. What I mean by that is they want to – some states have medical marijuana laws where they have growing cooperatives, which means there's people grow together under one roof. It saves money. It's more efficient. In Dearborn, they don't want that. Mayor O'Reilly said he wants to snuff out the larger scale growing operations, expressly prohibiting them. No reason. But I think that they want a better idea. They want, because right now you don't necessarily have to register. If you're a growing house, you don't have to register. This article implies that the law enforcement knows where the growing houses are, and they do. They leave them alone as long as they're obeying the law. Well, they want to know. Everyone would have to, according to the new ordinance, everyone would have to register, so they would know specifically where it is. It's causing confusion, not confusion, but controversy, because the people that feel that they're following the letter of the law and want to grow marijuana, you know, and the ones that want to smoke it, they feel they should be completely left alone, whereas the city of Dearborn says, no, we want a little bit more regulation. I know this isn't the end of it, no matter what happens.
No, it's not the end of it. My feeling on that kind of stuff is if you're doing something legally and you're doing it correctly and you're following it to the letter of the law, what difference does it make if there's a little bit more regulation? You know what I mean? It's kind of, my feeling is that the most people who would have a problem with this mm-hmm. are the ones who are growing it and not just necessarily selling it to the medical marijuana
the qualified user. Right.
Right.
Under the new ordinance, grow houses, as they're called, would be prohibited within 1,000 feet of worship sites, schools, playgrounds, and other places frequented by children. Additionally, they could not be within 1,000 feet of a business zone for adult use, like a strip club. Mm. Some might look at that and say, well, that's just common sense. Others might look at it and go, well, if they're growing in the house, what does one have to do with the other? And again, as a father, I look at that maybe differently than somebody that doesn't have children. And I don't necessarily want something like that by where my kids are on the playground.
Right. But if you're doing it legally and you're only selling to the registered users that are allowed to purchase from it, then they're not going to be selling it to your children. They're not going to be selling it. It's supposed to be controlled.
Right.
So I'm kind of for more regulation regarding it.
Something like this?
Yes, something like
and
this.
And I think that the reason why, and the reason why I agree with you is because that this was illegal for a reason.
Right.
Whether we agree with that or not, it was.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, I agree with it. It's no longer illegal in certain circumstances. I think you're like me. Well, let's just make sure that those certain circumstances apply 100% of the time.
Right.
And as Jay often says, there is a reason for government. We don't all want huge government or whatever, but there's certain areas where the government can do this best, and this would be one of those areas, I think. 1,000 feet from an adult entertainment thing like a strip club, that
again, because nobody would notice if you were standing outside your home trying to sell it to people.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. See, I don't know. But if you really want to grow it and sell it, then you need to follow whatever regulations are put in place. Period.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, it's just, and if your house is near a park, then, and you really want to do this for a living, then you need to move.
Or
if that's what the regulation is at the current time, then you need to follow it.
Or you know, buy space somewhere further away that not buy. You know, not a new house, but someplace where you can do this. I agree with you. We all knew this was going to cause controversy. And this, I think, when did the law go into effect? 2008? Under the 2008 law. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
That's a while.
I know. It seems like it was just yesterday.
I'm not being funny. It really doesn't affect me that often. So
right.
That's why I guess I wouldn't, it seemed like just yesterday. Wait, time for, forget it. Anyway, yeah, I'm sure we have not heard the end of
I'm
that
I'm feeling
story.
Hungry. Got the money.
The opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of anyone here. Listen, we have a few more minutes. It's actually 2 o'clock now. I know the podcast will go off, but while we're waiting for Joanne, Lindsay and I covered a few of these things on the Campus Connection, but there's a lot of stuff going on at the college. And I want to, if I could, the Henry Ford Community College's 38th annual Women's Luncheon to support students in need. This goes to scholarships. Mm-hmm. Specifically, I think it goes to Dream Keepers on campus. That will be Friday, March 25th, so in 2 weeks. There's also something going on, and I know that next week, you know Diane Green, don't you? Associate Dean of Counseling.
Yes.
Diane Green.
Mm-hmm.
We are, she is spearheading, she and Dr. Hildreth, it's the Imagine the Possibilities, which is the non-traditional careers for men in health careers. And that's March 23rd. Diane Greed will be on the show with both Jay and myself a week from today. Assuming he comes back from Austin and everything's fine. If not, she'll be on the show with Chris.